Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another Hammurabi Hangout. It is very early, and I am more tired than usual, so apologies if I make even less sense than usual. But it's nice to be here. It's nice to be hopefully bringing you some news, and it is always lovely to talk to my wonderful husband, Josh. Good morning. How are you doing, my love?
I'm okay. Just so everybody knows what she means by she's more tired than usual. I think we went to bed a little before 10. She taught her final Akkadian class last night, and I woke up from a standard nightmare around 12:45, and she hadn't fallen asleep yet, so
yeah, my brain just didn't want to stop, unfortunately. But
it is unfortunate.
But Akkadian went wonderfully. I enjoyed it. I always enjoy teaching. And the students always have really good questions, and I feel so bad because sometimes I just can't give them good answers, either because good answers don't exist or because I don't have the knowledge at my fingertips.
I think in every case, it's that those answers don't exist. We'll just go with that.
That's very kind of you. But it was a lot of fun. We went through some of the laws of Hammurabi, and we got about 6 lines into the famous Ea-Natsir copper letter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was fun. It was fun.
Is smelly.
Your copper is awful. I hadn't managed to translate more than 6 lines before class, but it was good to go through because old Babylonian letters have quite a formulaic opening. So I was able to show them that, and we got to the line saying, "You said you would give Gimelsin good copper." And it goes on to say, "You did not give him good copper, you gave him awful copper.
You're a dumb, dumb face.
You're a dumb, dumb face. You're the worst in the whole entire copper industry." So that was wonderful. They've all asked, well, not all of them, but several have asked for another Akkadian class. So I'm going to be talking to Peninsula about teaching maybe in the fall. And I can't remember if I mentioned this last week. I think I did. I've been toying with the idea of putting together language classes just through Digital Hammurabi, just for general interest. So kind of like a community college evening class type thing. Because I know we can definitely get ancient Egyptian, well, Middle Egyptian. Josh and I between us can handle Sumerian, Akkadian, and Hebrew. I know you said you could do Ugaritic as well, but I don't think all at the same time. I suppose we don't have to do all of them at the same time. So we've got all of those, and I want to find a Hittite teacher. I think I said all of this last week, but that is on my radar for things to do. I think that would be really interesting. Josh.
Sorry, I'm at the ATM. I don't want to hear.
Oh, yeah, no. That's very loud. That's very loud. We won't do that. So that was my day yesterday, plus, 2 different child health appointments. What else do we have? I know there were other things that we were going to talk about, and I have just promptly forgotten all of them.
Well, I wanted to tell my funny story about the library ladder.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
So if anybody's curious about how nerdy we are.
Very nerdy.
Very nerdy. Megan has built these beautiful bookshelves. But they go to the ceiling. So, and at the same time, we have seen the movie Bedknobs and Broomsticks any number of times. So, the combination of those two things will naturally lead one to install a rolling library ladder. And the way that Megan designed it is that there's there's one shelves, like one section of trim that goes horizontally all the way across. And it was, she built it in such a way that it had significant wood backing in order to hold the rod that the ladder slides across. And when we got the ladder, you have to like build it yourself, you know. It's an 8-foot ladder to make it so you can get to the ceiling. And it only has a connection point at the end. So you can't just mount the rollers wherever the ladder is designed to be mounted with the rollers at the top. Well, that meant we had to make a decision. We either had to cut a notch in this ladder to try to make the rollers fit in the middle or not at the top. We had to cut the bottom to make it shorter, so then it would be harder to get to the ceiling, but it would be able to go on that horizontal strip. And Megan could do either of those things, you know. Be not dismayed. Megan is not mocked.
You're very sweet. And I have
whatsoever a ladder soweth, that shall it also reap. But
because we bought a kit rather than having one custom made, which is a lot more expensive, the ladders come in standard. Excuse me. The ladders come in standardized sizes, so the smallest height ladder is intended for like a 9-foot tall bookcase. Although not 9 feet tall, they're pretty tall, but they're not 9 feet, which is why we're kind of dealing with this mishighted, mismatched thing. Sorry, carry on.
So, you know, we kind of talked about it, and I said, you know what, I think there's enough wood backing on the next shelf up that it'll be fine. I don't think it'll hold the weight of that ladder. So on Saturday, I spent the day like getting this these brackets up, getting them level. So I mounted all the brackets. And I was really proud of it. We bought a little laser level thing that you hang from the wall, so it like showed this green light for, you know, all the way. Anyway, and so then I pieced the, spliced the rod together, and Megan cut it to the right size, like the right length with her, you know, cutter, and. Then I found out that you have to put all the brackets into the rod first and then hoist the whole thing up and mount it. So I had to take all the brackets down and then slide them all. Of course, I put half of it upside down. Like, it was a whole debacle. But, you know, after a bunch of, you know, tedious sort of working and reworking, I finally got this thing mounted. I was really pleased. And I was sitting in the other room, and I thought, was that thing supposed to be at a specific height? Like, I know that we put it higher, but I mean, like, does it require a specific height in inches in order to work? And I just thought, oh my God, Josh, like, because I mounted it so it would be even with that shelf. So, of course, I immediately thought, my God, I'm going to have to pull all that stuff down. I'm going to have to, like, it's going to be in the middle of an opening for a book. It was just, it was all really bad. But I thought, you know, let me just look. So I looked at the instructions, and it said, for that size ladder, it needs to be mounted at 91 inches. And I was like, all right. Well, let me just see how close I am. 91 1/4. Is where that rod was sitting.
It was planned.
Yeah, definitely. My 16-year-old came out and I said, you know, There are some times in life that I think maybe there is a God. I told her that story, she said, we have to get rid of all these books and just get a Bible and put it right in the middle. Which I thought was pretty funny.
We have about
Anyway.
eight Bibles already.
That's true, that's true. No, we're I'm, well, I'm an atheist, so I can't read the Bible. It's
That makes sense.
yeah. That's what they tell
Definitely,
me online,
definitely not
so
allowed to. Well, even if you read it, you wouldn't understand it fully,
that's
so
right.
you're
Or
not
is it
filled with the
Holy
Spirit,
Spirit?
Josh.
Yeah. And got it.
No.
So
Delightful.
I am, I'm like going through what we said we might talk about on the show. So I am speaking this weekend in Houston. I'm flying down on Saturday to speak on Sunday morning. So there's a an atheist group called Houston Oasis. And they had me down last year to speak about this topic that I'd never spoken about before. It was a real challenge. It was slavery in the Hebrew
I
Bible.
mean, that's not something you're familiar with.
Not really, but I, you know, I'm kind of muddled my way through it, but sorry, all these people just like I'm on this 50 mile an hour road, and people just want to go a lot faster than that, so I'm pulling over to let them all go by so that they don't get very upset. But I learned many years ago, as I was in an emergency driving somewhere, that the thing that I used to do, which is to drive exactly 50 miles an hour, to try to teach people behind me a lesson, is not a kind thing to do. So, people want to risk going and getting a ticket. That's on them. Anyway, oh, so this year they asked me to come. Asked me to come down. Every Sunday morning they have a essentially like an atheist church service. I don't know what else to call it. It's really nice to have music, you know, like a performer comes and plays something, and then they have presentations. So this Sunday I'm going to be speaking on divine commands of violence in the Old Testament. So yeah. Should be good. So I'll be flying down on Saturday and then flying back Sunday evening. So I have dinner with the group the evening before when I get down, and then after the service, after the meeting, we all go out to lunch at this Mexican restaurant, which is really nice. And then somebody drives me to the airport. So yeah, should be fun. And I think we've probably told everybody this, but Megan and I are speaking at Baha Khan, so Blue Water Atheists, Humanists, and Agnostics
Yep.
in Sarnia, Ontario, which is right across the border. Go up through Michigan, and it's just right across the border in Canada. So we'll be out there in, what is it? Is it late August, early September?
Yes, I think so.
Can't remember. But the dates are, if you type in Baha Khan or go to our Facebook, maybe. I think we've shared it. I can't remember. You're the
Yeah, I
marketing
think so.
person. But we are going to be speaking on that topic, but in a more developed sense. We're doing like a joint presentation. So, yeah, pretty cool. Okay, sorry, I will stop.
It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be, I was going to say it's going to be the first time I'll be away from the kids since the twins were born, but that's not quite right because we'll be teaching a workshop or running a workshop at the University of Texas at Austin in late March on, well, really teaching graduate students how to do public outreach work. So how to take the information they have and share it with people who don't go to grad school because other people have other things they do. So that's really exciting. And honestly, I'm really, really pleased to see institutions, or an institution at least, taking seriously this kind of work, rather than just saying, oh, you're grad students, you should be doing academic research and academic research only. I think the dissemination of knowledge, especially knowledge that people are producing in universities, is really important. And like the dissemination, sharing it beyond with your peers. So not just taking it to an academic conference and presenting it and then writing a paper or an academic book, like taking it further than that and making sure that people who aren't academics have access to that information as well. I think it's really important. Obviously, it's kind of what I spend my time doing. So seeing a university start an initiative like that is really, really nice. And it's really gratifying, honestly, to be invited to run a workshop for them, because it feels like, I know, it feels like we're being appreciated, which is a good feeling, especially when you consider how much of academia has this massive case of imposter syndrome, which is bad enough, like if you're still within academia and you, even if you have like a tenure track position or you have a job somewhere, you're like, I don't really feel like I belong here. If you've left and you're working outside academia, but still academia adjacent, it's a little bit heightened. So yeah, it quietens my imposter syndrome, which is very nice. So we have that in March. I will be away from the children, which is exciting and terrifying, mostly exciting. And then hopefully, this isn't finalized, but hopefully the first or second week of April, Lexi and I are going to be going to the University of Michigan. Lexi is the wonderful person that I do the Reading Party podcast with, but we'll be going to Michigan to do a live taping with one of the history classicist professors there about the movie Spartacus, because he was a consultant for the Spartacus TV show that happened recently. So we're going to go and talk to him about the process of consulting and the movie Spartacus compared to the TV show. And I think because he's teaching Spartacus this year as well, he's going to be bringing his class along with him, which, yeah, it's all exciting. It's all happening this year. And we've been tentatively contacted for another presentation over the summer and possibly to edit a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my class yesterday, if I do another Acadian class, it's not going to be until the fall, because my spring and summer is fully booked already. This is what I mean. I don't think we've ever had this many commitments, and it's for a whole year, and it's only February.
Yeah. This is what they do.
It's exciting. It's exciting. I feel like we're kind of taking off a little, which is cool. And,
you know, Kip and I do that Hebrew readings.
Yes.
Every other Thursday, Kip has put together like a flyer. And he sent it out to a university, and I, to try to, like, you know, he's got a contact out there. And I suggested that maybe we send it out to this Assyriological email distribution called the Assassin List, that goes out to a bunch of universities that do Hebrew Bible. So Megan has told me that she knows how to do that, because she's highly educated. Did we put the Sumerian grammars on that list?
No, I don't think so.
That might be something worth thinking about. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I was gonna say something. Oh, I wanted to make a book recommendation because you've been teaching Akkadian, and it was a book that I used when I started my Akkadian journey, and he's come out with a new edition of it, which isn't, terribly unlike the first, but it does have some cool little updates. But it's called Workbook of Cuneiform Signs. And I decided if I was going to recommend it, I'd go back through it. It's just kind of fun. This is something that people don't know about. I mean, this is true in any field, I'm sure, but in ancient Near Eastern stuff, particularly in Assyriology, you end up working in a particular area of the field. And so, I ended up focusing in the early second millennium, because Assyriology stretches over like 3 millennia. And so, a lot of times, people that are interested in the Bible are interested in first millennium BCE stuff, so stuff during the Neo-Assyrian period or the Neo-Babylonian period or even the Persian period.
It's very late.
Yeah, for
And I
us it's
say
very
that.
late.
I say that with every inch of snobbery I can possibly muster.
But first millennium Akkadian is different from second millennium Akkadian. Like the language itself is essentially the same, but there are phonetic changes that have taken place. The cuneiform, the way the cuneiform is written, is very different. So if you're going to read new Assyrian royal inscriptions, it's a very different, it's a much more standardized form of the cuneiform. So in the old Babylonian period, like the ni sign has two horizontal wedges, but they're more diagonal, and they like come together in a point. Whereas in the Neo-Assyrian period, they're very blockish, and then the 2 points go straight out to the right horizontally. And so while that might not seem like a huge difference, it absolutely is when you're reading. So a lot of times people that work in the Neo-Assyrian period write like their dissertation or something, like my friend Caleb. It might be difficult for him to pick up an old Babylonian text if he hasn't worked through old Babylonian in a couple of years and read it. He might have to review what the sign forms look like. And I think people already have this idea that, oh, you're an Assyriologist, you can read cuneiform. Here, what's this tablet say? And it's like, whoa,
Go.
yeah.
Actually, that's a metalsmithing recipe from
Right.
Mari. I
Yeah,
don't have
so
that vocabulary or those signs.
yeah, I mean, if you think about it, even if because a lot more, I'm sure many more people do Hebrew Bible, or at least we'll get this reference. Like if you work in historiography in the Hebrew Bible, you probably spend a lot of time in like the books of Kings and Samuel and Ezra, Nehemiah. Like you're working in more narrative. And that has its own syntax and vocabulary. However, if you're, working in the prophets, now the text is much more poetic, and so syntax is very different. Word order is, more fluid. The vocabulary is it's poetic, right? So it's, more advanced. You use, more words that are used fewer times, that sort of thing. So, saying to somebody like, oh, here, read this section of Isaiah, that might not, they might not be able to do that on the fly. And it's more pronounced in Akkadian because there's a much wider diversity of material that we have. So, yeah, I remember in my comprehensive exams, I had to read a perfume recipe, I think is what it was. And it was like first, just figuring out that's what it was took me a while. So anyway, I'm gonna be quiet. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore.
You're talking about very interesting things.
And that's true, that's true.
But if you think about it, cuneiform existed over, what, a 3,000-year period? It changes quite a lot. I can't, even though I am a native speaker and reader of English, I can't pick up an old English anything and make head nor tail of it. Because it's essentially a different form of the language.
Canst thou sayest that?
As an interesting aside, my little sister actually did some old English in college, and it's very fascinating, but it's not recognized as English. I'll bet
her translations were probably a little wonky.
There's backstory to that, people. There's backstory to that. The first time Josh knitted a blanket, he was understandably proud, and we sent a picture to my family message group. And my little sister, one of my little sisters, is really the family comedian, and she responded with, "It's a bit wonky."
Aren't comedians supposed to be funny? I mean, it all sort of started the first time I went to your house at Prune Farm Cottage and sat across from, with your entire family, sat across from your sister, and she said something sort of snarky, and I did the whole, I've got my eyes on you, like I'm watching you, like do you guys know what I'm talking about, where you put, instead of giving the peace sign, you flip it around and you like point at your eyes and then point at their eyes, but without rotating your hand, right? So your fingernails end up facing them the entire time. If you guys can see the, I don't know if that was a good description, but anyway, apparently in the UK that means something very different than I've got my eye on you. And she took great offense momentarily.
Yeah. I think it was mock offense more than anything else.
And then I said, "Suck it up, buttercup." I didn't say that because your mother would have killed me, but I could have said it in theory.
You could have.
And I looked over and Al was putting pepper on his food, so I knew everything was right with the world. Just kidding.
No, that's pretty accurate.
Thank you.
Well, I don't think we have anything else to share. Do we have
lots to share, but, you know, we should probably let them.
Do people want to hear it is the question.
How many people are watching this, I wonder?
I don't know.
Let's do a test.
Let's do a test.
Help us out, everybody that's listening. If you listen, just write in the comments, "I listen." And let's see how many comments we get. It's going to be like one. I listen.
I don't think I can see like listening stats. Oh, no, there is a statistics thingy. Interesting. So it tells me the last one had 24 impressions. I don't know if that means that 24 people listened or that 24 people saw it. But we have 4 members liking the last one. Aww. And we have, as always, comments from Mark. Because Mark always drops a comment.
He does.
He does. All right.
I tell you what, if we get over 50 comments, I will do a beatbox session.
Oh my God. All right.
It's like nobody's going to comment now. It's going to be like a little tumbleweed blow across the front.
Just like, don't let Josh do that.
No spitting into the microphone. I'll try to do my William Shatner from Futurama. "I'm the real Shady. All you other Slim Shadies are just imitating."
Absolutely. On that note, we're going to go and get on with our various mornings. Thank you all for listening. If anyone has questions about the various things we've rambled on about today,
You're not alone.
You're not alone. We all have questions. We all do. But leave us a comment. I'll try and answer them. No promises, but I'll try. And we will see you back next week. I don't have any updates about the upcoming week. I will be sending out our monthly newsletter between now and Friday, I think. So if you're signed up to the mailing list, keep your eyes open for that. And yeah, we'll see you next Wednesday. I'm convinced it's Tuesday. Oh, okay. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Couldn't be Tuesday because we don't have the club going up. So.
We don't have the club going up. This is true. Have a lovely week, everyone. And we'll see you later.
Bye, guys.
Bye.